So good morning and welcome, everybody. My name is Kim Kilpatrick. I'm the Secretary of BLC Canada at the moment. And I just wanted to welcome you on behalf of the board and on behalf of BLC to this workshop. This workshop has is really popular, and we've acquired many, many new members. So if you're a new member to BLC, a special welcome to you. TVIs have a very special place in my heart, as I've been totally blind since birth. So I've had teachers at schools for the blind and in mainstream. So you guys are the best. You're the most awesome people. So really welcome. I just want to give you a few highlights about BLC. So you will be getting a welcome letter. If you're a new member, you'll be getting it very soon if you haven't gotten it already, which will tell you more of what we do. But just to let you know, the Teaching and Learning Committee that's hosting this workshop does have workshops for people, for teachers. And if after this call, you will be receiving a survey. And if you could fill that out, it would be really wonderful, because that way this committee will know what kinds of workshops would interest you the most. So that is great. We also have other workshops. I'm the chair of the Braille Promotions Committee. We give other workshops, which are geared to all kinds of segments of the Braille population. But I really encourage you to keep your eyes on those as well, and your fingers on those if you use them, because those are really important to our community, and you can learn a lot from those. We also have a newsletter which goes out every 2 or 3 months or so, which has really articles of interest in that. And coming up, we have our AGM in June, and there's going to be some exciting things surrounding the AGM. So it's a really good that you joined at this time. So I won't delay this anymore. What I'm going to do is I'm going to mute everybody, because there's now 51 people on the call. And so I will mute everybody, and then the host, the presenters and the host can unmute themselves. So I'm going to introduce Betty Noble, who's moderating this session. Betty is a past president of BLC and a wonderful Braille person and teacher and really passionate about Braille. So welcome, and I'll turn it over to her, and I'm just doing the technical things behind the scenes here.
Thank you very much, Kim. Yes, BLC is a wonderful organization. You probably know that it started out as the Canadian Braille Authority, and we became Braille Literacy Canada, I think it was in 2012. And I know that everyone who's a new member will really enjoy participating in this organization. So the Teaching and Learning Committee is delighted to be putting on this workshop. It's a topic that's important to all of us. And we're going to kind of go from east to west. So most of you saw the short bios of the presenters. So I'm not going to reread those, but if our presenters would like to say anything else about themselves, they certainly can do that as they are introduced. So just to let you know, we have Glenda Parsons from APSE, Lori Linsman from the Blue Water School District, Daphne Hitchcock, who teaches in Victoria, and I'm a retired teacher, and I'm going to talk a little bit about teaching adults Braille. So I'd like to introduce Glenda Parsons to start us off, and welcome, Glenda, and thank you for participating as a panelist.
Thank you. And it's great to be here. I have to comment, it's kind of nice actually to see some students that I've taught in university. It's kind of cool to see that. And of course, a few people that I know. So it's great to have all of you guys there. So what I'm going to talk to you about is, well, like you said, it's Braille in that virtual world. But just to give you an overview, first of all, of what's been going on. So I'm almost sure if you're familiar with what APSE is. So APSE is the Atlantic Provinces Special Education Authority, and we are funded by the four governments in Atlantic Canada under the Department of Education domain. And so we have services in all four provinces at various capacities for different reasons or whatnot. So we have teachers out in the field working with students. And then we also have things kind of from a center location offering support to students. So our focus today is talking about, you know, working with students who are Braille users and teaching them in the virtual world, which some people kind of go into a little bit of a panic mode, but just wanted to share some experiences we've had. And I have a couple of tips that kind of I met with some of these teachers who are doing some of that in contact, like as itinerants working with the students online. And we had a good conversation, and I have experience. I actually teach a student music Braille through distance, which I've been doing for a couple of years. And just experiences from all of us that we'll share some strategies that's making it work for us, and then some thoughts we've had about other things. But just to point out, I know that COVID-19 has certainly shifted the whole world of online learning. And of course, we all knew that there were incredible opportunities for online learning. But I think, you know, for some of us, we're that transition generation. And as transition, we're a little bit reluctant to take away that in-person and go virtual. But COVID-19 kind of made that have to happen. So it opened up a lot of possibilities. But I will say that prior to COVID-19, we were actually doing some training anyway, some work online. Our assistive technology, for example, were offering training to staff, as staff, school team, student teams, and teachers working with students. And we were also exploring the delivery of orientational ability through online learning. So that was all in the works prior to COVID over the last few years. But of course, COVID, it was a conversation and we were piddling with it, but COVID-19 kind of pushed us and we had to really go. So I'm just going to quickly tell you what we're doing. That's kind of the background. So we have a number of things going on, and some are in group settings and some are one-on-one. So first of all, you possibly may know that one of the supports we have would be short-term programs. So students would travel to the center based in Halifax, and for various reasons, and they'd come in and be there for approximately a week, 4.5 days. So of course, as we all know, there are restrictions with moving around and in, you know, interprovincial travel. So all of that was like, okay, how do we do this? How do we offer support to students and do that? So we came up with a system, and we're calling it a virtual learning series. And we developed programs over typically a 6-week period when a student can register. Sessions are about 30 to 60 minutes every week over 6 weeks. We give them various options to register different times in the day, so hoping that it works with their school schedule. And then they join us online and do the work. And so, like I said, we've developed the courses, and we had to basically make sure we're following comparable course development for education system, and it's working that way. So we're in our third series right now. And the one thing that I keep saying to everyone, and this is a common phrase everyone hears from me, is we're basically flying the plane as we build it, because this is brand new and we couldn't sit there for a full year and plan and think about what we were doing. We had to just do it and figure it out as we go. So everyone's being really patient, but it's working really well. And we're getting students from all four Atlantic provinces being involved. And actually the numbers of students involved are much higher because they don't have to be traveling, because some students were reluctant to travel for various reasons. And so now they're traveling, they're getting this online, and a lot of really positive feedback from everybody about it. And so when we're doing that, basically what we do in preparation is send information significantly prior to, right? And depending on the medium they get in their medium. So an example I'll just give you is we did set up a bit of a book club, and students came online, and we were, they were talking about wolves. That was a wolf called Wander is what they were looking at. So the team connected with wildlife park here somewhere. I'm not sure exactly where it was. Anyway, so what they ended up doing was at the park, they actually did the castings of the wolf paw, an actual size, and shipped that to every one of the students. So they had that tactile to explore. So these are the kind, like it was that pre-planning piece that made a significant difference. So every student would get their package for their program prior to, and that works really well. And that's just one, because I could be here the full hours. I'm trying to go quickly, and I'm from Newfoundland, so I can pick up the pace very quickly. And when I get excited, I'm worse. So I hope everyone can follow me. The other piece that we started because of this is what we're calling APSE Connect. And the APSE Connect is a series that is offered often in the evenings or throughout the day, typically a combination, but we're trying to target families and school teams and anybody basically to attend sessions to just get them more educated with what we can provide and what options are out there and whatnot. So if you go to our website, which is APSE.ca, APSEA.ca, and look at upcoming events, you'll see a list of anything that's being offered in the next little while. And if you click on that particular one, you can register. Very simple process. So any of you can register and participate in that. It's not restricted to Atlantic Canada. So you're welcome to participate. And if you keep checking, we have different ones. We've done sessions on, it's been our staff doing presentations, but also external partners. So we've had one on independent living in Nova Scotia. We had one about, trying to work with students to problem solve, scholarships. We've had a session on organization and labeling and working on independence for the student and, you know, tactile markers, large print labels, different things. But basically, the specialist working with families on that. So it's building again. And so we have a lot going on and that's only going to grow. And then, you know, like, for example, in February, we had some sessions on white cane and we had a panel discussion. You know, we've done many things and there's much more to go. So these are kind of the two bigger pieces that we've developed for the organization in that virtual setting. But I did want to kind of talk basically in the midst of all of it. I just wanted to share, instead of telling you like about different things different people are doing, kind of some key themes that we've come up with that are really important if you're looking at teaching that Braille, the student a Braille online. Because you would have, we have the student who is very competent, a very competent Braille user on the regular curriculum in school, and basically everything they get is in Braille. So they may be learning, like if they're in grade 10, it would be math. So it might be some concepts there. Then we have the student who is just learning the Braille code. And then we have students who are learning Braille and some words, but it's more about their, in their general curriculum, they're on a specialized program in school and they're building it that way. We have all three of that going on in the distance setting. And one of the big things that's really important, and I have a list and they're not in any order. One is really looking at the front end loading for materials. So typically when we're prepping to work with a student who's a Braille user, we all know that there's a fair amount of work that goes into that. So if you're trying to do that in a virtual setting, you have to back up even further because you need the time to get the information to the student. But some cases, the session might be offered in the school setting and the tools may be there to produce everything. That's one thing. So it's easier. But if it's offered in the home setting, it's possibly not there. So you would need to get that. So that's kind of one key. And then very important to work closely with parents. And it's also, we are noticing that there's a huge difference in engagement of parents. Not that they weren't engaged before, but it's just grabbed their attention, kind of look, seeing what's going on and watch the children transfer their skill and knowledge into at home and being able to apply it. So working with the families, and many of them are starting to learn the Braille code. I know one example of a family is, I think that the parents, I think it's the mother and the grandmother, there's three or four people who go to the sessions with the child because they want to learn Braille. So it's become a very positive experience for the family. And that's kind of one of the things that seems to be a big theme coming through. Also, one of the values is the more independent the student, of course, the better. Doing the virtual learning is fostering the independence, especially for the students who are using the Braille note takers, the Mountbatten Braillers, when they're independent with that, they're able to move back and forth and do whatever. Like they, you know, they may be relying on an adult, but I just think about it when you're sitting next to a person physically and doing something, it's very easy for us to take our hands and either just do it or, you know, partially do it. So in this setting, you really need to basically, you're not there. And that's what our team, the staff, they find very helpful is they're more independent with that. And so that another one is the use of language. So it's very important to be very careful with how you're explaining things to make sure it's clear and to the point, but being specific. So the student can do whatever you need to do. So think if you're explaining, you know, them to put their fingers in a certain position or whatever at the beginning, using too many words can be very frustrating. So do not be afraid to have that silence there, because that's very hard for us to sit and wait. And so, but that's a very big strategy that we find to be valuable in teaching. And I know when I'm teaching my student the music braille and there are people around just, you know, observing, there's a lot of quiet time because the student is actually reading the braille and I don't say anything. So it's probably painful for everyone else, but I know exactly what she's doing. And if she's going through, she'll ask questions or whatever. And it, you know, it's just saying what needs to be said as clear as you can and then backing off. Another very important strategy is taking the time to make sure the student is ready to be online. They're familiar with the platform that you're using and able to manipulate the components of that platform. We use at the organization Zoom, and specifically Zoom Health. We have been using Zoom for a number of years. So when it shifted to online, there was no shift for us because we were doing that anyway. But the Zoom Health specifically is private and secure, and we just get informed consent from parents. But the students are actually toggling often between Microsoft Teams or Google Classrooms, depending on the province. Different provinces do different things. But the BrailleNote Touch and Zoom seem to be the best friends, the better friends. They don't play, BrailleNote Touch doesn't play as nicely with Microsoft Teams or Google Classroom, but with Zoom, it seems to be the best result. So when an itinerant teacher is working with a student, they're often sitting in the class, online class that's going on by the classroom teacher. And so the student is toggling between their platform being used in school and then to Zoom for the itinerant in case there's things that need to be done. And one example that a teacher gave is, in Zoom, it's the ability to break out into classrooms. And so the teacher, I think, in class was doing scrambled sentences or something. And so the itinerant teacher took the student in a breakout room and actually had her braille the words. So it was just a bit different because it was like one of those instant things. And then so the student was, you know, practicing, reinforcing her braille. And then she had to take that and put that into a proper sentence. So she was able to do that because she could break out into the Zoom room, which is easier to do with the BrailleNote Touch. And just two more things. Always make sure that the technology you need is in place. Don't wait until the day to do that. And because there are things, and there may be in schools some firewalls or some kind of glitches, but typically the information technology person in any school is a very, very important person. Have good communication and a good relationship with them. They are not there to make difficult. They're just very aware of the security and privacy issues. So, you know, just kind of work through that, because for the students, for us, it's more about access. So it's important. And the last one that we talked about, and it was more about kind of, you know, if we were kind of really, really starting basically from scratch, because right now for us, all of our students had some beginning Braille training. But if we were starting from scratch, basically you would need to have a kit. So think about the different resources and tools that you would need, put it all together and get that to the student. And even take the time to work, if there's going to be an adult with the student, working with them so they understand some things. So just kind of build that. And I think that that would be very valuable. So that's kind of in a very quick nutshell what's been going on for us and how we've managed to make our Braille, the ability to offer Braille through virtual setting for the learners or for the students who are Braille users. That's me. And I hope it
is. Terrific. No, thank you so much, Glenda. That was very exciting. And it sounds like there are a lot of really interesting things happening at APSE. And it's a great introduction to our workshop. And now I'm going to turn it over to Lori, who's going to talk about some of her experiences in Ontario working with students. So Lori, feel free to unmute, and we're excited to hear from you now.
Hello, everyone. And I'm just going to check even verbally that you can hear me just fine.
Yes, yes, we can hear you just fine.
Perfect. I know. I've got, you know, I've got the symbols. I know what's going on here, but just like to make triple sure. First of all, I just like to thank you very, very much for inviting me to be a panelist today. What an extraordinary time it's been for all of us. As an educator, one of the ideas that I have been trying to keep at the fore of my mind during the pandemic is that virtually everyone's been impacted, sadly, negatively in some way, shape, or form. Health issues related to COVID-19 are unrelated, but compounded due to COVID-19. Disruptions to employment, additional barriers for individuals with disabilities, increased child, parent, and elder care responsibilities, and fewer outlets to release our stress. So the list, I'm sure, goes on, and it's a long one. We've had to dig deep at times to meet the challenges of the new landscape. We have learned, though, that necessity is the mother of invention or reinvention. And my students and parents and colleagues that I've been working with as a team to move forward despite these challenges have been a real inspiration. So I know that years from now, when I think back on these times, that's one of the things that I'm going to be the most grateful for. So what I did today was I decided to prepare a portion of my presentation as a narrative with a specific audience in mind, that being you, Canadian teachers of students who are blind. It didn't start out that way at all, but that's how it ended up. And so the narrative has no pictures and it doesn't begin with once upon a time because it's not a fairy tale, but it is a tribute to you. Because I know that even though I haven't met all of you, I know all of the work that you have been doing. And so this is a tribute to you. And it's also a tribute to a new colleague who has come on board, Andrew, in our board. So what was a team of one teacher of the blind is now a team of two. So that's pretty exciting. So if I were given the option, like I'm sure most of you, I wouldn't trade working with the students in person for the new normal. But undeniably, there has been learning, not just basic academics, but experiential real life learning. So here we go. My story begins in the Blue Water District School Board, a small but mighty rural board just shy of 9,000 square kilometers. When we left before the break on December 18th, 2020, we were asked to be prepared just in case we needed to pivot to virtual learning or remote learning, as I prefer to call it. That same day, the classroom teacher of one of my Braille-using students shared a document with me containing several non-tech coding tasks. In the event that we didn't return to in-person learning, this would be our next math unit. In Ontario, as of September, coding became part of the curriculum. So clearly we were on the cutting edge. I took a quick glance through the document, making mental note of all the visual tasks involved. Yikes! I took comfort when I got to the glossary, just words on a page in alphabetical order. For the structured teacher of the blind in me, that part was a beauty to behold. But despite all those annoying images elsewhere in the document, I did what we all do when presented with an accessibility challenge. I took a deep breath And I told myself, I've got this. There's going to be a way to do this. I just need to think it through. Today, it feels a bit risky sharing my story and my imperfections with such an amazing group of educators from across Canada. I'm sure that for every scheme I devise to make the coding tasks work, there are even better schemes out there. The first task was a replicate this board assessment featuring a 5x5 grid containing 7 colorful squares, 3 red, 1 green, 2 blue, and 1 yellow, scattered hither and thither. The objective was to provide directions to replicate the board using as few words as possible. So I went about creating the task using tactile view software and a simple letter abbreviation to represent each color. I'm a professional after all, and I've been paying attention to the way transcribers display color information in textbooks. I've got this. Or do I? My student's family has an embosser at home, perfect for receiving Braille instructional materials via email. It has proven to be invaluable during distance, virtual, remote learning. But for whatever reason, the file didn't emboss properly. So during a team session, I resorted to describing the grid. Not ideal, but you got to do what you got to do. At least we had completed that detailed column and row lesson in the distant past. It came in handy here. The Microsoft Teams platform provided my student and me a framework to meet virtually. The only catch here was teaching her all of the keystroke commands needed to accept a call, decline a call, leave a call, share the screen, toggle video, toggle mute. You get the idea. Thankfully, we had accomplished this during a previous session or two. This is where the authentic learning comes in. After all, technology skills are part of the expanded core curriculum, and what tech and social skills could be more transferable than using a virtual conferencing platform for educational purposes and for connecting with family and friends during a pandemic? Another task was the graph paper programming task. These are real titles, by the way. Here, students needed to write a program to reproduce 3 different images appearing on a 4x4 grid, using arrow symbols to represent moving 1 square forward, 1 square backward, 1 square up, or 1 square down. There was also a fill-in square with color symbol. So, what would any teacher of the blind do? We'd use it as an authentic learning opportunity to give a verbal description of each image. Image 1 shows filled in squares as follows: A2, B1, C1, D2. And then we'd go about teaching arrow symbols with a transcriber symbol thrown in for good measure. The last section of the graph paper programming task was to follow a program in order to draw an image on a 4x4 grid. Did I mention somewhere that my student ran out of tactile graph paper? She and her dad were creating their own coding lessons, so the graph paper that I'd sent home, just in case, was used for a different purpose. Enter Superstar Mom. 1 muffin tin covered strategically so that only a 4x4 section remained. For those of you who are wondering, the rescue efforts came prior to the Teams call as we problem solved via text message. The student completed the drawing task with a few foam hearts placed in each section to represent the image. We were all doing our best to think ahead, plan ahead, and have fun. Honestly, we had a great time testing the limits of low-tech meets high-tech strategies. And yet there was still something missing in this coding frenzy. More accurately, someone missing: the classroom teacher whose assignment had given rise to all of his 21st century learning. To work through a solution, my student and I decided to take a stroll down memory lane. 5 years ago, my student created a simple tactile drawing from a model described in a little resource called So What About Drawing? There was a simple tactile image that my student used to make special occasion bookmarks for her classmates. it was time to repurpose that lesson, a great non-threatening entry point for everyone involved. And so she began on the briller. We began. Right. S-E-I, W-H contraction, line two, right, G-H contraction, space twice, A-R contraction, line three, space, E-I. Voila! The heart was back in all its glory. We decided to invite Ms. CRT to a team session. This would serve as an assessment for the student. Prior to the lesson, I emailed my colleague, a real team player. She received a 4x3 grid containing 12 full Braille cells. You know the kind I mean, the one with the empty dots, for her to fill in and to create the image. The CRT also had a key with each Braille symbol and the corresponding print letter or contraction. So she had what she needed to complete the task. The assessment day came, and our student and I and the classroom teacher met via Teams. Wonderful programming language could be heard as our student began. Fill in S, move right, fill in E, move right, fill in I, and on it went until Ms. CRT was ready to reveal her masterpiece. The only issue was that yours truly provided the same Braille symbol for GH and AR. What coding assessment could be complete without a bit of debugging? I verbally described Ms. CRT's creation to our student, and with a few bits of debugging instructions, the image of the heart emerged. It was an amazing moment. Our student had clearly met the coding expectations, and Ms. CRT had gained a new insight into the medium of Braille and the additional learning involved for our student to get to this point. Out of necessity and in the midst of a pandemic, the expanded core curriculum collided with the students' academic programs, and the point of intersections were so numerous, it made my heart sing. Okay, everybody, that's my story. I hope it at least made you smile a little bit. Those, I know we're all out there and we've all been trying to do our best as we've been trying to teach online and so on. And I'm sure that there are things in there to which you can relate. As Glenda said, I think there have been some really, really great moments that we've been able to glean that we wouldn't necessarily have been otherwise, even if it wasn't necessarily all of this by choice. I know, for example, as Glenda mentioned, the mailing and couriering of items in advance, that's something that with one of my other Braille using students was critical to getting materials to her. And of course, the mail and courier systems have been really slow. So, you know, you really, really had to think ahead. Even more than under normal circumstances. There were some really simple and profound communication times I found also during this time with parents because they were able to participate in their child's learning more than if kids were in school. And they were able to really, in a sense, observe and be part of that direct instruction piece. I really do mean simple things when I say that. You know, I know one lesson I had with a Braille user was using a tactile ruler as number line just to support addition. And just having her, you know, move to the right to locate the number four, moving up to the tactile marking above, moving to the right, two markings, and down to arrive at the number six so that she had 4 + 2 = 6. And parents just, you know, really understanding all the unpackaging that we do as educators. And I think that was a very profound experience as well. You know, because our kids have to do so, so very much, and we ourselves are trying to keep up to help them keep up, you know, hitting two birds with one stone, as I say often, no disrespect to birds, but I, you know, the more we can do that, the better. So if it's a little bit of tactile discrimination that we're able to check off the list as kids look at, you know, color adjectives in French and just discriminating between the various forms of those, you know, that's done a little bit of pre-teaching. It's maybe opened up an opportunity to talk about what items are a particular color, and still, as I said, you know, meet those tactile discrimination skills as well. Teaching something really simple, like a tally and a tally mark with strike through, and just using a motivating topic to capture the student interest. And again, just having, you know, a parent nearby who's able to see the motivation in their child, you know, really a profound thing. Something else that, you know, was kind of interesting was as one of my Braille using students was reading, you know, every once in a while, she might get on to the, not the line that should come next, but the following line or whatever else. And it was very interesting one day because the parent said to me, you know, Lori, why, how can you possibly know where she is on that page? Like, I'm following along in the print. I don't know where she is. I have no idea. And just explaining, well, you know, I'm looking at an electronic version that is Braille. And, you know, sometimes I know that student X does move down one extra line. So I anticipate that, and that's where things are at. And again, what's really fantastic about that is then parents can kind of recognize that could be something to think about when reading is happening at home and so on. And that could be helpful as well. In our board, it, you know, things can be tricky, I'm sure, in many areas where you're living in a rural community and internet and so on is not always as reliable as we might hope. So I know I personally from time to time had to do the old phone call. And using a little program called Voice Recorder to record sessions, because that's something that we do is record the sessions. But, you know, you might have to end up using the telephone because, you know, in the case of one of my students, a parent needed that internet for work and so on. And so, you know, just being able to roll to with some of the realities and complexities around the learning from home piece, that was something that certainly I tried to be attuned to as well. Then there's, you know, all the basic things, like all of a sudden you have to go into fast forward mode because you suddenly have to teach kids, you know, how to address an email, give a subject line, send an email, all using the keystroke commands. Now we got to reply to an email, maybe forward an email, and so on and so forth. So just, you know, the job that we do when we're in the classroom is go, go, go. And the one that we're doing right now is go, go, go. And lucky me and lucky Andrew, my new colleague in many ways, we are actually working in schools once again. And so, as I said, I wouldn't trade that for anything. So we're very happy to be back for now, hopefully for always. I hope that gave a little bit of insight, and thanks for bearing with me with my story, but it just kind of lent itself, I thought, to telling a story. And I'm sure, as I said, there are so many pitfalls and so many things that we aren't just able to do perfectly, but rolling with it and keeping that positive attitude and working as a team is really key.
Wow, Lori, I am speechless. I think the story was absolutely wonderful. Takes a lot to make me cry, and I had tears in my eyes. So there you go. But not only that, the creativity, the involvement of the team, the increase in technology skills, wow. So we're going to move now to Daphne in Victoria, and she's going to share some of her experiences. Daphne?
Thanks, Betty. Thank you for inviting me to be part of this panel. And gosh, so much great information from Glenda and Lori. Thank you. That was amazing. Our experience in Victoria has been, we sort of have a hybrid of instruction. Some of our TBIs are working directly in the schools. And then I am doing all my teaching from home. I retired a few years ago and I came back to help support our Braille using students in the district. Who would have thought? I sure didn't. I never thought that Braille instruction virtually could be so successful. And man, there's workarounds out there and they do work. So I just wanted to share with some of the things that have made it workable for me to be working from home and to be able to keep on top of my students' work over the computer. The logistics and setup that Glenda was mentioning and Lori was mentioning, so important. I having that pre-thought of where is the student going to be working, either if they're in the school, as some of my students are, or in the home, as one is, that dedicated workspace, getting that set up with the family or with the school ahead of time is vital. And that the student knows their workspace, they know where their Braille paper is, they know where their books are, so that they can be as independent as possible when they're on a call with you. I use Zoom platform to connect with my students, and that has worked out amazingly well. Getting back to the setup, one of the things that needs to be in consideration, of course, is being close to an electrical outlet, because of course our devices often will go down in mid-lesson. So that's another thing. For the student working at home, the details around table height, chair height, all those things that we consider so readily in a school had to be kind of teased out in the home as well. And making sure that the parents that were involved were as engaged as the student in the setup. So not that mom and dad had put everything away, but that the child was a participant in putting things in the places in the home. So that, again, building that independence. When you've got the setup, then you can get going. And having that measure of flexibility, of course, is second nature, I think, to all TVIs, you're heading down that road with a lesson in mind, but jumping on that bandwagon of the teachable moment. And I think that that doesn't change whether you're in a virtual setup or whether you're sitting in the same class with the child in a classroom. You have to go with the flow of what the child is experiencing. With that in mind, an example that comes to go the other day, I was working with a student in his home. The Zoom kept glitching a little bit, and we were able, though, to keep going through the lesson just because, although I didn't have the audio clearly, I could see what the child was doing. And so this has been a huge part of our lessons, is I have a setup in the home and at the school where the student is taking their device and laying it on top of an acrylic tabletop. So the tabletop itself is really an old-time Brailler Perkins Brailler wooden reading stand. And I don't know, some of you may have remembered you had your Perkins Brailler and then you put a little tabletop over top of it. And so the student could braille on the Brailler and then put their hands up onto the tabletop to read their book. Using an acrylic stand such as that, so something that has, it's about 20 inches wide, 10 inches deep and 9 inches high, so it's up and above over the Brailler, putting a device on top of that with the camera pointing down, you can view very readily what the student is brailing line by line, word by word, and as well you can view a student if they're not brailing, watching them track over their lines of braille. And for our youngster that is at home, he is an emerging braille reader. So it's really important that there is an ability to actually watch his tracking and to make sure that it is moving that smooth left to right and not scrubbing on a word or, and watching his development of tracking has been phenomenal. It's in September, we were looking at a child very tentatively moving left and right across the lines. Now we're watching him sweep ahead with his right hand and then catching up with verbally and building some fluency into his reading as he starts to put together the sentence structures and gain confidence with his reading. So having that particular setup with the camera has been just awesome for us. I've really found it much easier to be able to zero in on what the child is having an issue with, or just even to gain how they are approaching their work. It's also been used, one of my students uses a math window to do her computations on. So we've put the math window also under the camera so I can readily help her set up her equations and know where, if there is a difficulty, where that is. So it's been amazing from that point of view. I would think one of the things that we, definitely the spinoff, as both Glenda and Lori mentioned, is the engagement of family, and I would say, and siblings as well. In particular, the youngster at home has a younger brother, and he is very much part of the lesson. So one of the ways we've kept learning going, we meet with this child four days a week. The lessons, again, very practical, keeping to that 30 minutes to 60 minute time frame, are very focused. Unlike being in the classroom, I would go from a brailing lesson to a reading lesson very quickly because I could facilitate the movement of the materials easily. What we've tended to do is just focus one day on brailing, one day on reading. And that does have drawbacks, but it's also worked out really well because we've reinforced a lot of the learning by writing letters back and forth between the student and the teacher. So I am taking lessons where I know things need to be reinforced, incorporating those words into letters that are being mailed to him. And the mail is actually me dropping it off to his house, but it could go through the post. And then he's actually mailing it back to me at my home. So then I'm getting that, seeing how his braille is coming from that more independent work. The other thing that was mentioned was it's very much a hands-off and not helping our students to do the reading, and that very distinct need to be descriptive and very, very clear about what we want our students to do. And if you're reading and you misread a word, moving back to the beginning of the line and rereading what you need to do. So that use of language is really, really important with the kids in describing how they're to move through their work. I think one of the things that I have really found that the kids are super engaged, and it's again, it, as in with any lesson, you need to watch their body language and see how they're doing as far as are they seemingly tired, but keeping the lessons focused and into short chunks, I think the student interest has maintained. Getting back to that sibling involvement, some of the letters that are being sent back and forth involve the sibling and things that the two kids can do together. And then my student is the one that is the reporter in that. And just thinking with the older students, I encourage them to set up the Zoom calls with me, not me initiating it, partly because I want them to have the ability to be able to do that and the skills to do that. So it goes both ways. Sometimes I set them up, sometimes they set them up, and that has worked out well. Drawbacks, I guess, would be the Wi-Fi going down, or glitches within the Zoom platform while we're working. But they haven't been so astronomical. I think, oh, it's no different than having to go out for a fire drill mid-lesson. I mean, it's an interruption to that learning, but in the bigger picture of things, it's not insurmountable, and we've got around it. So yes, the IT in the home is really important. The IT in the school is really important, making sure that wherever the student is working, that it's a dedicated space, a quiet space, so that there isn't a lot of background noise for the student to be overhearing and interrupts with their ability to hear you on a platform. So that's sort of how we've managed, and it's, anyways, thank you, and I'll hand it over to Betty. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Daphne. It's so interesting to see how things are different and yet how things are the same everywhere we're teaching, and the different experiences that we're having with the students and the independence that the students are gaining. It's really terrific. Teaching just goes on no matter what situation we find ourselves in and whatever the challenges are. And I think teachers of students with visual impairments are just so creative, and the students are so lucky to have people as creative as all of you are. So I'm going to talk a little bit about adults, and I had an experience working with a young adult who was really brushing up Braille skills. So I can't share teaching with someone who's just a beginning Braille learner, but I will share some of the things that we did as we reviewed some of the Braille contractions. I used Celebrating Braille, a Canadian approach. And I find that that's a really useful book, the way that it's laid out. And you can purchase it at CNIB. And a lot of people hesitate to purchase it because they see that volume one is missing. Volume one was the Braille readiness book with all of the tactiles in it and was very costly to produce. And so they're no longer producing it. But volumes 2 through 5 have all of the Braille lessons. And so it's a very useful resource. I also had Kay Holbrook's book for teaching teachers of students with visual impairments, the Ashcroft book, which I find to be extremely useful resource as well. So as we went through the lessons, I would explain the contractions and the rules and the concepts. And then she had a Braille note taker, and she would write down the contraction. She would read the contraction in Braille and practice some of the words. And then I would read some of the sentences with together with her. And the student also would have a copy of the book, so that we could read along together. And that was obviously very helpful as well. But for a while, the student didn't have the book. So what I would do is I would read a sentence and have the student write the sentence. And then I would ask the students, okay, what contractions did you use? Tell me how you wrote that sentence. And that way I could check to make sure that the student was writing the sentence correctly and the students could read the sentence as well. And so I would often then email the students additional sentences to practice writing. And then at our next lesson, the student would read those sentences back. And so that was very useful. Oh, I'm so sorry. Someone's coming here to pick up a computer from me. So hopefully my dog will stop barking in a minute. There we go. Okay. Let's see. Oh, the other thing I used to do was email my students some very short little paragraphs or short stories to Braille. And then at the lesson, we would go through them and I would have the student read the story to me. And for this, I often used ESL stories that are really short and very simple. And so we would read through those stories together. And then I wouldn't get the student to go through and tell me exactly every contraction and every, you know, how the story was written. But I would do some spot checks. I would say, how did you contract this word? How did you contract, you know, that word, that kind of thing. And this worked very, very successfully. The other thing that we often did was we would talk about things like the history of Braille and talking about Braille in other countries. And I would ask the student questions like, how do you think you're going to be using your Braille? Are you going to be doing a lot of reading? Are you going to be labeling things? And also, it's important to find out what the student's interests are and to find information that the student wants to read is really exciting. I also wanted to share about a program that Braille Literacy Canada has started, which I think is making a huge difference for adult Braille readers. They call it the Braille Zoomers. And they get together on Zoom and strong Braille readers and beginning Braille readers, and they have different topics that they share each month. Braille in the kitchen or different Braille labels or many different kinds of ways to use Braille and to talk about Braille. And also people can share what they've been doing and how their learning of Braille is going and what challenges they've had. And it's been, I think, a real wonderful addition. The other thing I've been involved with is something that a vision teacher in BC has started, and that's called Braille Games Day. And so a group of Braille users from all over the province have been getting together with some Braille using young adults. And we've been playing games like Jeopardy and Trivia and having different categories like, you know, how do you contract this word? How many contractions are in this sentence? And we've also had a chance to talk about the history of Braille and Braille technology and things like that. And that's been very useful and very fun. And it hasn't really mattered where the student is in their Braille journey. Everybody has participated together and a lot of learning has happened. And I think it's made Braille in a lot of ways, you know, really fun for students and really help motivate students to learn Braille. So I've noticed that people are starting to raise their hands, and we do have about 20 minutes for questions or comments. So I think I heard Caroline, but I don't know if Caroline's first.
So maybe I'll just tell people how to do it if you don't know how. So I'm doing this from the keyboard, being totally blind person, but if you're using a PC, it's Alt Y, the keyboard shortcut. If you're using a Mac, it's Command Y. If you're on your iDevice, it's either in the participants list if you tap on your name, or in the More tab at the bottom. But I'm imagining most of you are Zooming and you know how to do it. Yes, I see Caroline has her hand up.
Okay, so I actually am coming at this from the angle of I'm going to be starting actually on Thursday to teach Braille to people through the Manitoba Deafblind Association. So I was just kind of curious to know if anybody had done any remote training with deafblind individuals, because there are a couple that want to do remote. And I think one of them would be okay because she is advanced, but there's another person who is not. And I don't even know like how I would get him started without being in person.
I think one of the things that you would probably have to do is prepare a kit. Like, I think it was Lori who mentioned that, and right. Gwenda as well. So you might want to start off, for example, with a 6-cup muffin tin and some tennis balls or something like that. I'm going to ask a couple other of the teachers on our panel to comment if they would like to. Glenda or Lori or Daphne, do you have any comments about that?
It's Glenda. I guess my question though is, are you talking about kind of the access piece, like that they'll, is that what you're talking about, or actually the actual putting their fingers on the Braille? Is it about them? Yeah.
Eventually it's going to be actually getting their fingers on the Braille, but I only have 2 copies of a book right now. I picked up a book from Future Aids that starts off with the very basic, you know, beginning alphabet, and then transitions into punctuations and contractions and UEB and things. And I only have 2 copies of the book. I'm being reimbursed for supplies, but I'm still trying to kind of keep the supplies down. I do have muffin tins, and I picked, you know, the disposable one so I can leave one with each person. I have some alphabet sheets and number sheets that have both raised print and Braille on them. So, I mean, I'm working on the kit, but it's just a matter of like coming up with strategies. Because like once they start working on the actual Braille, you know, I know that a lot of people scrub. And if I'm working with adults, these are people that may or may not have good sensitivity in their fingers, that kind of thing.
You might need a volunteer to sit with the students, or an intervener.
There probably will be anyway,
with the student. And if you have a situation like that, then you'll be able to get the feedback that you need. Mm-hmm. It won't be ideal, but I think it will definitely be possible.
Okay. All right.
And
thank you.
You could come on the Braille Zoomers calls too, Caroline, and ask there, or the students.
Yeah, I know you guys have one coming up on Thursday. Are we set up for, maybe this isn't the place to ask, but are we set up for a deafblind person, or would they have to have their own intervener for something like that?
Jen, are we doing transcripts? Daphne's doing summaries, aren't you, Daphne, for the Zoomers?
Yes, I am. There's always a summary sheet at the end of it, but we also every one of the calls is recorded, so there is a transcript available as well.
Okay, because one of the people is able to Zoom independently, but she doesn't voice at all, and she doesn't, you know, so she uses typing. So somebody would actually need to live caption for her. And I mean, if it came to that, I could probably do that part if she wanted to attend. She wants to transition from EBAE to UEB.
Oh, So I don't know if Zoomers
would be good for her necessarily.
It's maybe too, but any, we could talk about, or like you could talk to Jen about this, or like we could talk about this. Yeah. But yeah, cool.
Okay. I'd like to know, do we have any?
Yes, we have two more hands. We have Jeff Rainey and then we have Pamela Tarr.
Okay, so Jeff, go ahead. You'll need to unmute yourself.
Oh, yes. You're unmuted now, Jeff.
You there, Jeff?
We can't hear you. You are unmuted. Oh, yeah. There you kind of. Yeah, pretty quiet. There you are.
All right. My apologies. But yeah, I really enjoyed a couple things of note. First of all, Daphne's positive scenario on the aspect of teaching and how she went through the visual at the visual parts of teaching. Like, for example, having that Braille stand over top the Brailler and the camera, like, for example, the tablet, first of all, focusing down so that she could see what the student was doing. And that would be something that would be, that's just a teaching aspect. But for a question from the story that Laurie told about her exercise on that little drawing exercise that she prepped and taught her student and then included her teacher. How has it been actually teaching the Braille draw, like the drawing of Braille? Like, for example, that S-E-I-T-H, you know, G-H-A-R kind of contraction thing. The kind of connection between the visual elements of that symbol and how that communicates in Braille.
Laurie, do you want to?
Yeah. Hi, Jeffrey. It's Laurie. So, yeah. So what that was a coding activity that I was referring to. And so then when my student was trying to create a program for a teacher, it made sense to me that we would work with this Braille heart, and that she would then give the programming instructions for the Braille. What I'm going to do is, and I'm not going to share my screen because I like I said, the teacher handed me a print copy. And so I'm going to show you for those who are able to access this, it might help. I'm just going to show you what I'm talking about when it comes to these symbols. Hopefully you're going to be able to see this okay. So these were the kinds of coding symbols that were in the print version of the assignment. And so this is where in my story I'm talking about, you know, a right pointing arrow. That funky one is a color in, and then left pointing, down pointing, and so on. So really what I'm doing, what I tried to do was just, well, how, like, the, in order for my student to participate in the class, which, you know, when we were in remote is a team session, she's going to hear all this stuff about arrows and right arrow and moving to the right and whatever. I wanted her to be able to have a way that was as close as possible to what the print version of that task was. And so that's what I chose to do, was to do the task that way. And so I don't know, there could have possibly been a different way of doing it, but that was how I was trying to integrate a very, very visual task with Braille symbols. And so hence she learned all the arrow symbols in Braille, and we had to use a transcriber's note for the fill in command and so on. Does that answer your question, Jeffrey?
It does, and it gives context of the lesson itself. It's not so much like a quizzical lesson as more of just a drawing in and an inclusive lesson. So
yeah, it's really a coding lesson that in the print version was extremely is extremely visual, but I wanted the student who I support to be able to have something as close as possible to Braille. And so, you know, when she completed her task, honestly, if she was reading it out loud, which is, you know, how it would appear, like how it would come across for her classroom teacher, I mean, if you didn't know, there'd be no difference between her program and a print user's program. Hopefully that helps.
It does. Thank you very much.
It was a pretty wacky story, let's face it.
Well, she was able to do that task, but then she was also able to share a different kind of coding task with Braille and the heart picture. So that's very cool. We have another
Pamela Tarr. Yeah, Pamela Tarr.
Hi, everybody. I didn't have a specific question. I was just practicing the raise hand because I couldn't see it on my screen. But I do want to thank everybody for sharing your stories. And it's really great to hear that other people are doing kind of similar things or having same kind of problems or challenges and successes as we're having here in Saskatchewan. I'm from Saskatchewan. So I just, again, appreciate everybody's comments, and it's great to see so many of us. Sometimes we feel very isolated in our own little areas, but it's great to see that there is a whole team across Canada of people who are teaching students with visual impairments. So great. Thank you so much for sharing.
Hey, you're very welcome.
I can't raise my hand because I'm a moderator, but I do have a question if no one else has one.
Go ahead, Kim.
It struck me as I was listening to all these great ideas that there could be students that you have that have very spotty internet access or no internet access or slow internet access. And I wondered if any of you are supporting students over the phone, like the actual using an iPhone to be a phone instead of these other things. And, you know, because we do forget those people that fall into that. So I just was curious.
Yes. And in fact, I think somebody mentioned that. I think it might have been Lori. But I know that others, when the internet fails, obviously there's a plan B, and people are using the telephone if they need to, especially if, you know, the Wi-Fi gets congested or parents need to use the internet or, you know, whatever.
Or maybe they don't have it. Yes. Like there's very few that don't have it, but there could be some that don't have it, you know? And I always wonder about them. So I don't know if anyone has worked with any of those people or has anything to say.
I've had that experience with one of my older students. The Wi-Fi went down, so we just started talking through her phone and proceeded on the lesson that way. It was different, but it worked. Just that flexibility being built in, and it also is helpful if the student has more than one device with them before they get to a lesson with you, that they not only have their Braille Note Touch or their iPad, but they also have their phone there. That is really helpful.
It's Glenda. So we are fortunate in Atlantic Canada that basically all of the provinces have been supporting students with devices. And for those who are struggling with the access piece, they're providing the individual MiFi devices or whatnot as needed. Because of course, in Atlantic Canada, we have a significant amount of rural areas, very small communities and whatnot. So that's how we're doing it. As an organization, we provide the resources, but our philosophy is we will not let those points you just raised be reasons why we can't offer support to a student. So we look at the circumstances and, you know, it is expected that, you know, people are doing that and paying for it, whatever, but acknowledging that there may be people not able to, or for various reasons. So, but we will not let that be your reason, because we're just ensuring we want all students who are supported by us to have is equitable to be able to participate in these programs and or any kind of teaching. And like I said, that will not be. And I think, Kim, what happens in lots of areas is just ensuring that's a conversation piece, And lots of times in school systems, that's kind of a piece that's quietly in the background. It's not always, you know, this out there kind of thing, but you're always aware of situations that can come up, and it's that case by case basis. So it's all, like I said, it's always about the student, and we're going to make it work. That's our philosophy.
I'm so glad to hear that, because I worry about that. You know, like I do think about it when I think about students and how they're doing these days. So it's really reassuring to hear that you have that in place. That's really great.
It's Lori again. And I think for me, when it was me who referred to the working with my students, sometimes having to use the telephone because of various internet challenges and so on. But, you know, I think it's a very empathy building process for a sighted person like myself to just rely on our human voices and communicating. But as I said to the parent at the time, I wasn't just relying on the human voice. I had, you know, in front of me a computer with all of the Braille that I was working through with the student. So, you know, it is amazing what you can do orally. And our kids are, that's how they roll. So, you know, in that respect, I think that was really informative to work that way sometimes, because that was what the option was. But so, you know, again, maybe not ideal. I really appreciated listening to Daphne's strategies there for working with a very early Braille user with the camera and so on. I mean, that's so very important to be able to get that feedback in real time. It's really amazing. So, yeah.
Well, thank you. And as a totally blind person, you notice I have my video on. Like, we're all these oral listener people. So yes, I just want to make sure no one gets lost in that.
Oh, and I should have mentioned I had my video off as well. And it's basically just because it eats up my phone battery and my computer is in the shop. So my phone is what I have to use. So anyway, do we have any more hands, Kim?
Jeffrey put his hand back up. Is anyone else that hasn't put their hand up want to have a question just before we get to you? I think there is. I don't know how to pronounce your name. I'm really sorry. Tanzalit?
Go ahead.
Okay, go ahead.
Hi there. I'm from Saskatchewan as well. And this is just in response to Daphne's story that she was sharing with regards to an acrylic stand that went over top of the Perkins. And I'm just wondering if there was something commercially made for that, or if it was just something that you kind of made on your own, as us TSBIs often do. We make something out of nothing. And then my second question is just around the device that you, with the camera to see the Braille. Dock cameras seem to be a really hot ticket item in Saskatchewan right now for classroom teachers. And I'm just wondering if you use that, or if it was just simply an iPhone or a tablet that you set up. Just if you could speak to those, that would be appreciated. Thank you.
Thanks for your questions, Michelle. There are yes and no. Yes and no, there are commercially things out there available. What you may see them as is, in jewelry shops, you'll often see an acrylic stand showing jewelry. And so Staples had a set of them, of the acrylic stands. I don't know if they're still stocking them. They were available there. Bed Bath & Beyond had an acrylic stand to be used as a read in bed or eat breakfast in bed kind of stand. It was completely acrylic. What our district ended up doing is we couldn't source things quickly enough, so our maintenance and facilities people put together a stand for us. and it had wooden sides and an acrylic top on top. Following this, there's some notes that have come out of this session. I will include some photos and the dimensions so people can see what the stand actually looks like. And I know there's lots of information from the other presenters that we want to share with the group. So stay tuned. Something will come out.
That's awesome.
Okay.
Thanks, Daphne. Victoria, we have time for maybe two more questions. So, Victoria?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, you're muted. Vicki, you're muted.
Still muted.
Sorry, it's not a question.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, just a quick comment. Thank you, first of all, to all the presenters. I've come out of retirement 2 years ago to help a young lady who's homeschooled, who has three residences, one of them in Mexico. So one of the things that I've listened to, and Daphne especially, talked about the pros or things that have come out of this. And something that I was very struck with is that being in the family home, it was beautiful when my students started to show me in ways of looking at her family, that she was using her Braille in more than just what we were learning. For instance, she wrote up her Christmas wish list and stuck it on the fridge this year. And her father came around the corner and was quite surprised to see something in Braille on the fridge. So again, just thank you so much. I really rely on your expertise. And again, just another reminder why in this strange and wonderful world, we've come up with yet another bonus. Thanks so much.
Thanks. Anyone else? I know Jeff had his hand up.
Has hand up, but I only see his hand. So that's
okay. So good. we'll take Jeff, and then I think we'll have to close off for now. So Jeff, go ahead. Don't forget to unmute. Oh, Jeff lowered his hand.
Oh, I lowered it. Sorry.
Oh, no, you lowered it. Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry
go
that.
Ahead, Jeff. Sorry.
Always been tricky, even in class. So I was just wondering if it's been part of the curriculum. How has math Braille and math stuff been virtually? Has the curriculum been adapted to make it a little bit a little bit less of a stress in terms of the workload? I personally always struggled with supplement diagrams or even just some of the more extensive stuff and sometimes even the more visual stuff. How has that been communicated and also just in the curriculum virtually? That's probably a big one to address here, but
Maybe we could think about doing a workshop on teaching math virtually and some of the resources that are available that might answer that question. It's not one that can be answered easily, but I'm sure Glenda and Daphne can share and Lori can share information about that. I know Daphne is using a program called Math Window so that she can work with a student. The Braille Note Touch has some wonderful features for working with math. Does anybody want to provide a brief response? Glenda, do you want to tackle that one?
Well, it's funny because as you're asking the question, I'm sure Daphne's thinking the same. We could sit probably for a day and talk about this, right? Because there's so much. And but Math Window is a really powerful one, but it's just being creative. And interestingly, one of the teachers was explaining how she was introducing is polynomials. I just don't know my language of all math. I think it's polynomials. And how she just had it set up in a tactile way. And it was fascinating. It was all virtual, but it was like the student had this hands-on opportunity. And that's how she figured it out. And then she transitioned it to Braille. So there are endless ways to work on it. And there are a lot of resources out there to support some of this. And in the school system, the resources are there too. Now we may need to do some adjusting with it, but the resources are there. But it's quite doable. It's definitely doable. And what I find, this kind of is my opportunity to reinforce the unified English Braille, is that because it's all embedded now, it works better, right? Whereas before it was a different code, it was more frustrating. But as a teacher, for me, it's even becoming familiar with that. And it lines up. Like, anyway, it all comes together, but there are lots of resources out there and it can be done.
So that definitely might be a future topic to suggest in a survey that we can do that. And probably we can provide, some visual demonstrations of that as well by sharing our screen or maybe a video of us working with a student or something like that. So thanks for that suggestion, Jeff. So we may build on that. And I think we do have a storyboard that has been created by the Teaching and Learning Committee. And it's just a little presentation about teaching fractions in UEB. Thank you. Daphne, did you have a comment about that before we go?
No, I just ditto exactly what Glenda said. It's doable. In fact, some of my favorite lessons are doing math virtually. It's been fantastic. It's worked out so well.
Great. You know, it's Glenda, just one more comment to it. You know, the fear, it's me as the teacher. That's what happens. It's not the student. I find it's the individual. And it's a similar conversation I have when I'm trying to really push the music Braille. And I'll get a teacher asking, and I'll say, so they'll say, here are the reasons why not. I'm like, so is this your concern or is this the student's concern?
Yes.
And they'll always stop and say, me. Like, well, then that's not the reason to, so that's the idea there. So it's a comfort zone for everyone. And that is the issue. Students just figure it out. So it's more about us. If there are challenges, it's because I'm making it a challenge.
Right. I did notice we had one more raised hands and I'm really hesitant to cut it off.
Jennifer Bass V. I don't know how to pronounce your last name. So Jennifer.
Go ahead.
Hi, sorry. I know you're just about finishing up, but I just wanted to, I apologize. I joined late and I did miss some of this, unfortunately, but I caught a little bit. I just wanted to share a couple of things that I'm doing with the student that I'm working with. And it is on the phone full time. And we are working through math using tactile diagrams of everything and creating our own tactile manipulatives. It's unbelievable what we're doing. I never imagined that we'd be able to do what we're doing. We are, and the student is being very successful. So the student has a system where her parent logs them into a Chromebook, gets them onto Google Classroom. The student is able to mute and unmute themselves to interact with their class. And I'm in the student's ear throughout most of the day helping to access various parts of her curriculum, and that includes her having Braille copies of everything, and I also have access to those Braille copies and tactile diagrams for everything, and I also have pictures of all those tactile diagrams that were created for her. So a knock on wood, the system has been going remarkably well. It has developed an amazing sense of independence for the student that we really didn't imagine prior to this pandemic. So we've come a long way, but definitely I would be interested in anything that you're doing with math and the Braille Note Touch, because she also has her own Braille Note Touch and we're working on that. So, this is very valuable, and I missed the first half of this, but definitely be interested in doing this again. And I loved the Braille Games Day idea. So too bad Ontario didn't have something like that for the students to get together and have some fun, because it's very work directed. So thank you. And I apologize for sneaking that in late.
No, that's okay. And there is a recording, or there will be a recording available on the Braille Literacy Canada website. So, if people want to listen later, that's a possibility
and notes
as well.
Too. Right, Daphne?
Daphne sends out notes, yes. And as she mentioned, there will be some pictures.
Yep, I'll send those out, and I'm just going to sign out because I have a student right now. So thanks.
There we go. Terrific. Well, thank you, everybody, for participating. And we will definitely have other workshops. So Thanks again, and we'll close off for now. So bye for now, everybody. And thank you, Kim, for being a wonderful co-moderator. Really appreciate it.
You're so welcome. Anytime. That's what Braille does for me. Lets me moderate.